This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Future Farm Botanicals Liquid Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary extract and natural honey flavor. Future Farm's Wild Oil of Oregano supports a variety of healthy benefits, including antimicrobial effects, as well as supporting the immune system. Plus, Future Farm is the first ever to formulate Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary. Rosemary aids circulation, helps alleviate muscle pain, improves memory, and also gives your immune system a boost. The natural honey flavor enhances the taste while still giving you all of the benefits. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Wild oil of oregano is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. The focus is on integrative gynecology and natural care for women. It was International Women's Day recently, and that helps us focus on the fact that there's some inequity in healthcare for women. Women sometimes get the short end of the stick, especially when it comes to GYN care. And today's guest is dedicated to doing something about that. He's Dr. Gary Goldman. He's a good colleague of mine here in New York City. His specialty is gynecology with a focus on integrative women's health. He's trained in functional medicine. He has all the great conventional medicine credentials. He has served as a resident physician at Cornell Medical Center and was also chief resident there. He's a veteran physician. He's now at the New York Presbyterian Hospital, Weill Cornell Medical College. He is one of the rare birds in integrative medicine who both practices integrative medicine, but also maintains a hospital affiliation where he's very active and he has admitting privileges at New York Presbyterian Weill Cornell. So without further ado, here's Dr. Goldman. It's a pleasure having you on the program, Gary. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Ron. Really appreciate you having me here.
Okay. Well, first of all, what got you interested in pursuing a functional approach to women's health? I mean, you in a conversation previously, you told me how many births did you attend to? How many babies have you delivered? Like thousands of babies?
about 10,000. Now, all of that was not in my private practice. A lot of that was during residency. I think my busiest day as a resident, I delivered 23 babies.
Oh my goodness gracious! In one shift.
Yeah.
So obviously, you know, you did a conventional approach to OBGYN, and then at a certain point, you developed an interest in using more functional, natural approaches. So, what was your epiphany around that?
That's a kind of a long story. I'll try to keep it short, Ron. My background was with my internist, Mitch Gaynor. Mitch was one of the fathers of functional medicine.
Known to many of our listeners.
You know.
Yeah, indeed. And
yes.
The late Dr. Gaynor. And of course, he's been a guest on Intelligent Medicine many times.
Yeah. So Mitch and I did residency together, consulted each other frequently, and when I finished my residency and he finished his, I think I was his very first patient. I believe there were still boxes in the exam room when I went to see him the first time. So he was my caregiver for the better part of 27 years. Hmm. And as he became progressively more functional in his approach, I benefited from that. And it was a rare treat to be, what can I say, a guinea pig of functional medicine.
But what a great mentor to have, you know, someone who is really one of the true inspiring leaders in the field.
Exactly. So over the years, I was introducing progressive elements of functional medicine into my practice before it had the cover name. And it wasn't until about 5 or 6 years ago that I was introduced to the Institute for Functional Medicine actually through my wife when she was making inquiries to care for her mom, who was recently diagnosed at that time with Alzheimer's disease. And as she discovered this more formal institute, she introduced me, and it was life-altering. So that was my epiphany, and I was finally able to get true training and education to augment what I was doing and what I had learned on my own.
So what are some of the conditions where functional medicine or natural medicine or nutrition supplements can have a significant impact beyond what's available in a conventional standard care?
That's called throwing me an easy pitch, Ron.
It's called a high hanging curveball for you to hit out of the park. Okay, we're playing.
Exactly.
It's kind of like a home run derby here.
Right. You know, the short answer is everybody benefits from functional medicine, because at its root, what is functional medicine? It's going back to the basics. I tell my patients there are very few things I'm going to suggest to you that your grandparents didn't lecture to you your whole life. You know, go outside and get some fresh air and stop eating that junk and eat your vegetables and so forth. So, so much of functional medicine is ultimately lifestyle. And when you lead a healthy lifestyle, you give your body all of the elements it requires to do what it's truly made to do. Now, unfortunately, we live in a society where our foods have been altered, the quality of our air, our water, it's so stressful. There's very few elements left that look in any way similar to the world in which our grandparents were raised. So in many ways, we're fighting against society in order to get back to the basics.
Well, another way to look at it is, what are some of the factors in Western lifestyle that conspire against women's health that may give rise to these frequent gynecological complaints that we see?
Such a great question. So one of the first, I'll bring up, for instance, in the reproductive age group, polycystic ovary syndrome. Mm-hmm. And I was taught that this is one of those, quote, enigmatic diseases. Mm. You know, we don't really understand what causes it. There's obviously, it's associated with all kinds of excess weight. But ultimately, we don't understand, is it adrenal in origin? Is it ovarian?
Acne, hirsutism, infertility, you know, all that. Yeah.
Exactly. So the deeper you get into the study of polycystic ovary syndrome, it's really fascinating where so many elements of what we learned in medical school, literally every class, plays a part, from neuroanatomy to endocrinology, lifestyle, and so forth. What we have found is that for patients especially who are anovulatory, who are not getting regular cycles, a loss of as little as 5% of their body weight can induce ovulation in over 50% of women. Hmm. Now, what a simple thing to recommend, and it certainly sheds light on the etiology. So a lot of our PCO patients, better than 80%, are overweight. And what we have found is by improving something as simple as diet and exercise, we can reverse all of the sequela, every single one.
Mm-hmm.
Increased
and
androgenism.
Lower DHEA, lower testosterone.
Correct.
And not the patients don't just feel better, but biochemically, they improve. Their LH-FSH ratio improves. All these markers that are hallmarks of the disease recede.
Correct. And so it's amazing how you get back to the basics and you look at the adverse lifestyle that so many of us lead and you see those repercussions. Another example would be for the older folks who are now nearing and entering menopause. And I don't have to tell you how many people are plagued by adverse symptoms of menopause. Once again, when you look at people's lifestyles and improve there, you can see tremendous changes in the way that people experience things like hot flashes, headaches, night sweats. These things are amenable to behavioral approaches. I won't say forever and for always, and that's where we have so many other tools, but lifestyle does play a big part in these ailments.
Also, I've heard it said that endometriosis, which is an inflammatory disorder, is amenable to natural therapies, and there's a linkage to chemical exposure. Can you discuss that?
Sure. You know, the big study actually goes back to dioxin. So it was a study that was initially done on great apes, where they induced endometriosis by sewing shut their cervix. And as a result, they would get all of their menstrual flow retrograde out through the fallopian tubes and into the pelvis. Mm-hmm. These poor apes suffered terribly with all kinds of endometriosis. They then exposed normal apes without sewing this the cervix shut, and just by exposing them to dioxin, they were able to induce the same exact histology, the same appearance of endometriosis in the pelvis. Now, of course, you may say, "Well, where does dioxin come from in this day and age?"
Right, it's a horrifying it's been banned, answer. Right, yeah,
right. So it's a byproduct of bleaching tampons.
Ooh,
there is detectable dioxin in bleached tampons. Why does anyone need a sparkling white tampon? Why isn't an organic cotton color sufficient?
That actually sounds like a hybridization of the two experiments. You, in effect, block menstrual flow to some degree with a tampon, and then you introduce a chemical agent right in there where it's close to the target organs. That's not good.
Exactly. You know, this fascinating information on endometriosis, I'll quickly share with you a study that came out on mice looking at their microbiome, because we understand that the gut flora has tremendous impact on our health. So this very clever group, I believe they were at WashU St. Lou, an excellent institution, and what they did was they induced endometriosis, again, presumably by sewing the cervix shut, in these mice. And they then empirically treated some of them with a variety of different antibiotics, some of which would have more or less effect on particular types of flora in their gut. And they then sacrificed those animals and looked at the ones who had not been treated versus treated. All of the treated animals had less amounts of endometriosis. Mm-hmm. And in particular, the mice treated with metronidazole, also called Flagyl, had the lowest amount of endometriosis. They knocked it down fivefold.
Mm. And so by the way, there's a treatment for bacterial vaginosis, which is
correct,
a kind of overgrowth of harmful bacteria vaginally. So the idea being that overgrowth of harmful bacteria in the intestine may be the mediator by which endometriosis injury gets compounded with progressive inflammation. I guess that's the take home.
Well, or perhaps there's something being elaborated by a particular group of flora. Now, metronidazole's effect is especially strong against non-oxygen requiring bacteria. Those are called anaerobic bacteria. Mm-hmm. And the second part of the experiment is that they did a fecal transplant. They took healthy mice, reintroduced normal flora via a fecal transplant into these treated mice, and lo and behold, all their endometriosis rapidly returned. So again, it's highly suggestive that there's something in normal mouse flora that allows for endometriosis growth. What it is, hard to say.
So the take-home is not necessarily that we want to give all women metronidazole ad infinitum, fecal transplants. Maybe it's, you know, not yet ready for prime time for a condition like endometriosis. But there are natural measures by which we can optimize the microbiome. What are some of those?
Right. So interestingly, there's some studies out recently that for women who are having recurring vaginal infections, that a vaginal flora transplant literally will cure them.
Hmm. Like a probiotic.
Similarly. Right. So because we don't know which particular flora are the guilty parties, if you will, just transferring healthy flora from somebody else seems to be very useful. We've seen that for depression.
Are there vaginal
flora banks? Obesity.
Are there like...
No.
Okay.
No.
That could be a whole new medical
We know what the... it's... it's an interesting job.
Right.
But we do know that the normal flora of the vagina is primarily lactobacilli, and then the next player is bifidobacter. So I'm actually trying to come up with a nice vaginal insert, a suppository probiotic, properly pH'd to help restore the flora in an effort to do so in a more specified manner.
Right.
So but we'll see if that works.
Short of these very serious medical conditions, there are so many women who are plagued by chronic yeast infections or what's called bacterial vaginosis, with discomfort, discharge, odor. And the answer is not vaginal douching. In fact, that's counterproductive.
Correct. Correct. So no one knows what to do with these folks. There are national protocols for treating women with recurring yeast infections. But equally as problematic are the bacterial vaginosis recurrent episodes. And there are no national protocols. And I believe it's because we're honing in too small. We've lost the forest for the trees. Where does normal vaginal flora come from? Well, it comes from being a healthy person. And eating healthy foods and living a healthy lifestyle allows the GI tract to have normal flora, and so too the vaginal flora. And of course, they're in close communication. They're in close proximity. But upwards of 80% of the vaginal flora arises from the GI tract. So when I'm treating my patients, it's not just about giving a vaginal antibiotic and ignoring the rest of the body. I treat the whole patient. And we start talking about everything from, tell me about your exercise regimens and the degree of stress you have in your life and how you diminish stress and so forth. We look at the whole person, and lo and behold, we get cures.
Okay, folks, at this point, let's pause and allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share this vital message with you. Here goes. Are you looking to give your immune system a boost? This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman with a natural solution from Future Farm Botanicals, liquid wild oil of oregano with rosemary extract and natural honey flavor. Future Farm's wild oil of oregano supports a variety of health benefits, including antimicrobial effects, as well as supporting the immune system. Plus, Future Farm is the first ever to formulate wild oil of oregano with rosemary. Rosemary aids circulation, helps alleviate muscle pain, improves memory, and also gives your immune system a boost. The natural honey flavor enhances the taste while still giving you all of the benefits. Future Farm sources this product from the Mediterranean and produces it in the United States. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's Future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com. /Hoffman. Wild oil of oregano is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make intelligent medicine a continuing, free resource to you. And now back to our guest, Dr. Gary Goldman. Do you have a handle on fibroids? Because I recall, when I was a macrobiotic practitioner in the very early days of my practice in the 1980s, before I kind of adopted a more modified Mediterranean diet with the inclusion of animal protein, I would put a lot of women on a macrobiotic diet, which could backfire spectacularly because of the really high levels of estrogenic compounds in soy, for example, which was like a real mainstay of that diet. Do you treat fibroid patients with a dietary modification? What have you found most helpful?
So I start with my fibroid patients actually by looking very deeply at their estrogen metabolism. We degrade the main estrogen in our body, estradiol, via three different competing pathways. And the way that one person degrades estrogen is very different from the next, most of which is genetically determined, but some of which is also lifestyle determined. We can measure those metabolites. One of the metabolites is called 16-hydroxyestrone, and it's highly estrogenic. In other words, we're converting the most estrogenic compound in the body, estradiol, into an equally estrogenic metabolite, 16-hydroxyestrone. These folks suffer from estrogen-dependent problems, such as fibroids, endometriosis.
And it's how they metabolize estrogen. They don't properly break it down. A couple of ways that could be a problem. One is you make too much. The other is if you make perhaps a normal amount, but you're simply not breaking it down, or you're transforming it into more highly fibroid-generating estrogens, right?
Exactly. And if we want to improve the metabolism, we can do so through a variety of mechanisms. There are many supplements that we use to drive the preferable pathway, the 2-hydroxy pathway, one of which is DIM, mm-hmm. D-I-M, also known as diindolomethane, which comes from broccoli and other cruciferous vegetables. Mm-hmm. Now, unfortunately, if you tried to do it from broccoli alone, you would give the cows a run for the money in your methane production.
Yes, right.
So,
you have to eat enormous amounts of broccoli.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah, you need a lot of broccoli. But it's easy enough to take a DIM supplement. Indole-3-carbinol is another supplement we use to drive that pathway. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we look to inhibit the competing pathways, and that can be done with things like pomegranates and mm-hmm. grapefruit and hops, as well as bioflavonoids and vitamin C.
Do you like flaxseeded oil for that pathway?
So not the oil, but the ground shells. Mm-hmm. Right, so
flax lignans,
flax shells. Exactly. So those have been shown to be a true estrogen antagonist. They block the effect of estrogen. Mm-hmm. And there's actually an interesting study looking at women who have had a history of breast cancer when they were given sham muffins, I think a blueberry muffin, versus a flax muffin. The women who used flax muffins had a lower rate of recurrence of breast cancer than those using the sham muffins. So, diet can clearly have an impact on the risk of recurrent breast cancer.
And measures to reduce estrogen would also include reducing your adipose tissue burden, because the fat cells are like estrogen factories. And exercise, which attenuates estrogen, because, I mean, there's evidence that you can literally walk for the cure. If you have breast cancer, you can lower your risk of breast cancer recurrence by, significant double digits by exercising on a regular basis. So that might also have a positive impact on fibroids.
Correct. There are studies that show you can reduce the risk of estrogen-dependent cancers and tumors by upwards of 30% by diminishing your body fat. So exercise and diet have a huge part to play.
Is there a contraindication to using progesterone? There are a lot of, you can go to a health food store these days and buy yam extract, which yields bioidentical progesterone, and smear it on your skin. It'll be absorbed transdermally. A lot of women take that to alleviate menopausal symptoms. Is it a plus or minus when it comes to fibroids?
So, interestingly, we treat fibroids with estrogen blockade pharmacologically. We give medicines like Lupron or Alyssa, which prevent the production of estrogen. They put people into this temporary state of menopause. So starving fibroids of estrogen allows them to shrink substantially. There are also studies looking at progesterone blockers, I think mifepristone is a progesterone blocker.
That's actually an ingredient, I think, in the morning after pill, I think, right?
Exactly. That's right. Mm-hmm. And that has also been shown to reduce the rate of the rate of growth of fibroids. The problem is there, it gets very costly.
Yeah.
It's not FDA approved for that medication. So that's typically not available to patients outside of an investigative protocol.
But the implication, you might want to withhold the topical progesterone. I'm not clear on that.
Right. So there's controversial data, or I'd say imprecise data, on what happens if you augment progesterone for fibroids. Mm-hmm. I will point out that we lack the enzyme to convert precursors of progesterone in yams into active progesterone in ourselves. Mm. So you can take a yam, you can bring it to a lab, treat it with a particular enzyme that we don't have, and you can develop progesterone from that. So we have natural progesterone that requires a prescription, but if you just take a yam supplement, it doesn't become progesterone in our bodies, unfortunately. Topical progesterone that is physiologically active requires a prescription. There's a lot of, quote, progesterone-containing creams, but in this country, it requires a prescription. So if you can buy something over the counter, by definition, it has a subtherapeutic level. So okay. I think those are a waste.
So it's less efficacious, but also less harmful. Okay.
Yeah, but I'm a big fan of progesterone. Let me be clear. This is where the terminology gets very confusing, Ron, because so many people confuse the term progestin with progesterone.
Yeah.
So when people take Provera, also called medroxyprogesterone acetate, or MPA, for postmenopausal hormone therapy, that is an artificial form of progesterone called a progestin. Mm-hmm. It comes from an entirely different molecular backbone, and it has very different effects on the body. I'm not a fan of progestins at all. They clearly increase the rate of breast cancers, and we've seen that in people taking
increased appetite,
taking
gain weight,
the birth control
mood effects. Yeah.
Correct. And even the progesterone-containing IUD. Now, I don't want to be alarming. The increased rates of breast cancer here are very small, barely detectable, but they are detectable. They are measurable. Mm-hmm. But again, relative to the baseline rate of breast cancer, which is 12%, I don't think that those small numbers are, for most women, very meaningful.
I want to get into, in just a moment, natural hormone replacement therapy, which I think is one of the tools in your armamentarium. We're going to pause because we divide our podcast into two parts. Today's discussion is about integrative gynecology. We're talking to Gary Goldman. His specialty is gynecology, but also integrative women's health and functional medicine. And we'll be right back with more on today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman.